Red on Red.
This week in the podcast, we're joined by Rory O'Brien, frontman of Noise Outfits, Hands Up Who Wants to Die and 10 Past 7, as well as taking in tunes from this weekend's Cork Jazz Festival. 10 past 7 with Comedy Night from Shut Up Your Face, released, God, 2006 via Out in a Limb Records, and Bantam with Roll featuring none other than Jer from 10 past 7 on the Skins. Bantam, of course, playing a collaborative gig with Bon Voyage this Friday, helping open the Kino's Jazz Festival proceedings. Tickets for that available at uticket.ie, doors 8 p.m. This is Red on Red, Cork's new music podcast, dropping every Wednesday evening via Cork's Red FM and redextra.ie. We're also available on Apple and Google Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever else you listen. I'm Mike McGrath-Ryan, and this week we're joined in studio by a certified legend of weirdo Irish music, a veteran in his own right, a sonic manipulator for Hands Up Who Wants to Die, his own project Dancing Bears, and most recently again, 10 past 7, Rory Francis O'Brien. How's it going, buddy?
How are you doing? Not too bad, yeah.
Thanks a million for coming out. It's busy, busy times for you at the minute.
Yeah.
Between projects, Hands Up Who Wants to Die is just off the road. 10 past 7, coming back on November 1st at the Spalpeen Fonuc with Horse in support.
That's right, yeah. For Halloween, or like in between.
It's going to be...
some Samhain time.
You're a sound man, in fairness to you. And it's all going to be all sound. That's happening at the Spalpeen Fonuc on Friday, November 1st. For more information, find 10 past 7 all over social media. And, you know, before we kind of talk about 10 past 7's recent Purple Patch and comeback, because there's been a couple of shows and you've been busy with other projects as well, let's kind of wind it all the way back to kind of the outset of 10 past 7, because I'm sure it doesn't feel all that long at all. It's been well over a decade since the release of debut album Shut Up Your Face, and I imagine that the genesis of the band goes a lot further.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose we came to Cork in 2002 and did music management and sound course and Stefan Naefa, and kind of started the band as like a kind of a jam. And that's why we didn't have the vocals, because it was like we didn't want to have to make up full songs. And then we just heard all this music that was coming out of Cork and internationally, like all kind of Godspeed and Tortoise and then Rednecks and Weevil and Rest and all. And it just became like, oh, this is something we can actually do.
Yeah.
And we were just given the freedom to kind of, not have vocals, but it wasn't an intention in the first place. And we were just playing like a bunch of gigs a week and jamming every day. And it's very different now.
Did that fit at odds at all with music sound and management? Kind of, you know, like they do kind of pride themselves rightfully on their record of having helped make some hit makers over the years, like Sinead Lohan, like O Emperor. And then at the other side, you also have it as kind of a more fertile hotbed of people that have been practicing for a couple of years that are coming through in various capacities.
It was perfect because of the fact that you had people from all different kind of, we'll say, coming at it for different reasons. So people straight out of school, as well as people coming back to do something to kind of formalize their knowledge of stuff. But you had sound engineers, you had people who were like really good on a bunch of different instruments, loads of diverse kind of interests in types of music.
Yeah.
So for us, it was like just, it was perfect. Like we could just record stuff and practice and borrow gear. You could try out different gear, learning a bit of music theory as well. Like, it just fast-forwarded a lot of the stuff that we would have just been making a lot of mistakes, which we made anyway. But it just kind of helped us to be really confident of what we were doing. And it made the gigs really... you know, we knew how to be in tune.
Yeah.
We knew what it was like to be on stage without having to do, you know, years of gigs.
Yeah.
You know, so it was super helpful in that way, yeah.
It's interesting then that you bring up the likes of Rest in that list of influences, so to speak, because, you know, the early to mid-2000s, as you mentioned, was a bit of a transformative time and really kind of where the seeds started being sown for the current growth of independent music in Ireland, you know, in addition to Rest and Waiting Room more locally, you know, up in Dublin, you had the likes of Rednecks, Dudley Corporation, the Jimmy Cake, you know. It was just such a fertile ground for you to kind of really take something and make it unique. Maybe talk to us a little bit about coming up during that period of time and what that whole buzz was like.
Well, what was interesting about it from our perspective is we didn't really know any of that stuff was going on. We were kind of, you know, 17, 18. A lot of the bands that were around, like, you know, Give Man a Kick were around. Or maybe they hadn't started. Justin Wee were a band.
They would have been Tooth.
So, yeah, it was like, but they were just gone, I think, and then it was just in that in-between. So it just seemed as though there was people that were like, even if you're like 3 years older than us,
yeah,
you've, you know, been around at that stage. So yeah. It meant that we just were doing what we were doing, we didn't really know about half of the stuff that a lot of those other people knew, like bands. So we were just learning loads, and we just kind of got brought along for the ride, whereas other bands had been there and kind of maybe paved a way. You know, it's that kind of thing of like Weevil might have been playing, you know, a bunch of gigs and people are like, we don't understand what this is.
Yeah.
But with Weevil and Rest being around, and then for us to come along, it wasn't a million miles away from stuff that people had heard. Whereas I imagine when Rest first started, people were like, I don't get it.
Yeah.
A bit more than when we came around. And then, you know, flash forward 5 years after we were around, it wasn't even a question.
No, Math Rock had really kind of set
in.
Yeah,
I mean,
by
no, but when we were first playing, it was like, why don't you have vocals, play a killer song? People didn't understand what was going on,
No. I imagine that was a challenging environment to emerge into, but what you mentioned, Give a Man a Kick, and of course, no conversation about 10 Past 7 is complete without talking about Out on a Limb Records, which now is kind of rightly revered in certain quarters for the role that it has played in helping kind of do its part in terms of facilitating that whole scene of bands that was happening. First in Limerick with Give a Man a Kick, Is It Okay to Be Loud? Jesus was my very first kind of Irish DIY album, and it was my light bulb moment. You know, other people have said the same about yourselves, other people have said the same about Waiting Room, Rest, Hooray for Humans,
etc. I mean, it's exactly what I was just saying, this kind of idea that they, you know, Give a Man a Kick had a recording, or like, I don't know what we're going to do with it, and then, you know, Richie was like, I'm up for putting it out. Let's just, you know, try and see what happens, you know? So they didn't even have somebody to pave the way for them that much.
Yeah.
But then, and Albert was there as well. So then by the time we were a band, we played a gig in Limerick when there was the Aspersion Music Collective and a bunch of sound people there actually putting on shows. We played a gig. They had, they just about were starting to form a record label at that time. And then we feel like we just bandwagon jumped onto that, but it was like Waiting Room, Rest, Give Man a Kick at two albums out before we managed to get one.
It would have been, we are the way forward in 2005. Jesus.
Yeah. So I think it was just that thing that we were just kind of just that bit younger and were just kind of fit in, and we got on with everybody so much, and everyone was just doing it for their own reasons. There was no kind of idea of what it was to be a DIY band. There wasn't really any options either way. But they also, Out on a Limb, found itself in a kind of an interesting, just on the what ended up being the end of the CD, you know?
Yeah.
So at that time, you couldn't stream music really. You could download stuff, but it was, you know, it would take somebody to actually upload it in the first place. So at that time, you could sell CDs, you know?
iTunes was very gatekeepy as well, very early on.
Absolutely, and especially like if you weren't part of a major label, you actually couldn't be streamed a lot of the time anyway. So it meant that we were able to go around and do gigs, and, you know, the CDs were in the shops. Like, I can't even imagine a band thinking about that now, where it's like, I mean, some, you know, record shop in Sligo had like 10 CDs and maybe sold 3 of them. And, you know, and then we got some back. And so we managed to experience this whole thing of, I don't know, like being like a band who had an album out in the shops. It was mad. I remember I was playing in Virgin Records when it was in town, and it was like, the CDs are on the shelves next to the Deftones and stuff, you know. It was just kind of mad.
I remember seeing a 10 Past 7 CD in, of all places, Dano Centra in Donrell, where, you know, RMG Chart had picked up some of the distribution off of Out on a Limb and just kind of had stuck it on the lower reaches of the shelves under the chart CDs at the time when RMG Chart were doing kind of in-store installations for Centra. Like, wild shit to think about now in 2019.
I wonder obviously now the internet has taken over from that kind of, we'll say, random access to stuff, but at the time, having that physical copy there, someone picks it up, they like the look of it, or they're just intrigued, and it kind of works quite well for a band like 10 Past 7 that maybe we do fit into genres and stuff like that, but our mentality is just to be a bit different, you know, or you're not really sure how to take it. So it would be the mindset of someone going along, picking up that CD. That's the perfect audience, as someone who goes, I don't know what this is.
You'd a shiny cover as well.
Yeah.
That always helps matters.
Yeah. So I think that it's kind of another world, really, from the internet stuff, you know?
that whole tactile experience is something that we could get into forever.
Yeah,
but we'll avoid the rabbit hole for now, although we're going to revisit that in the future episode of the podcast. Speaking of your debut album, Shut Up Your Face gets released in 2006 via Out on a Limb, as you mentioned, first of all on CD and then later via Bandcamp in 2011 as part of their digital reissue campaign. Maybe talk to us a little bit about how Shut Up Your Face came together, just the process of collecting earlier songs that had been put together, as well as writing new songs, just generally agreeing and settling on an album, post-production process, and what you remember about how it was received.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting because we, I think, I'm not sure if we had the stuff recorded, but at the time we did a gig in Limerick and we met Albert, and Albert was like, hey, you know what, if you record something, I'll put it out. I didn't know what he was involved with at the time or whatever, you know, he was just putting on the gig, but we kind of got this idea of like, oh, geez, we really should try and get something together, because even that idea of just anybody, even a random person saying it to us. So I'm not sure if we had the EP recorded. So the EP we just recorded as part of the college year. It was like, oh, let's record something. It was Burr Quinn recorded it, who's now, you know, does Sound Live for Villagers and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, but at the time he was like, oh man, this guy's way better than me at sound. And I'm also meant to be getting grades in sound. But, you know, it shows over time. It's like Mick Flannery was in the same class as us.
Yeah.
And he was writing songs. I was writing songs. And I was like, oh, man, I got to give up. This is just some dude who's the same age as me who's, like, in this course with me. And then years later, you're like, okay, no, he's you know, a cut above. Like, so we actually recorded onto that first EP. Onto, like, yeah, all VHS tapes. And did a jam of a bunch of songs in the middle, so there's like three of the tracks are just one take, once, you know, one go live onto the thing. So then we were like, oh, we're after putting out this thing with five tracks on it. Out on a Limb, who now at this stage were like, hey, you know, we did maybe a couple of gigs for him, say, hey, you know, if you want to do something, we think it'd be class to put it out. Then we had to write a bunch of songs. And I actually originally asked, could we do an EP? Because I thought, like, okay, we could definitely get another five songs together.
Yeah.
You know? But literally, we just, you know, it just, we managed to get enough songs together to fill a side of a CD.
Yeah.
And that was when we were like, can we bring it out now? And then we actually, speaking of distribution, if you think about it in this weird way where we were going to release the album and we had a tour booked for the release of the album, and Coldplay were bringing something out. So then, because Coldplay were bringing something out, Gammack, Give Man a Kick, had to move their release date, and then it meant we had to move ours. And that affected us.
Jesus.
When you think that, like, how little that has any bearing on what we would do now. You know,
because attention spans are different, whereas this was the height of CD and labels were still kind of guarding their
the trucks
CD
wouldn't
buyers.
Take it, so it was almost a case where kind of, you know, it was like, look, we've got X amount of boxes of this thing, we're gonna flog loads of this, we don't really have room for the extra, but you know, it was almost like that, you know.
I was about to say that's the labels being cynical as opposed to the distributors. Holy
yeah,
cow.
Yeah, a bit of everything going on where it was like, look, it's just, there's too much noise, put it out whatever this other time, you know.
What's so that? Yeah, like, how do you tour that then if you've no shops to point to?
So
and
then
say
we ended
us?
Up doing, we just did another tour, and then we were like, okay, we'll have to release it after Christmas or whatever. So we had the album done. The same thing is kind of happening us now where we're doing a gig soon around Halloween, and it's like, you know, we're in the middle of finishing an album, but we're not going to rush it because we know it's going to take a while, you know. So we recorded with Ross O'Donovan in Carrigaline, and they converted a house, you know, his where he was living. So we kind of recorded in a bedroom, essentially.
Yeah.
And we actually did some demos with Mark O'Connor, Balls of Iron, who recorded the Give Man a Kick album. And that sounded really cool as well, and we just kind of came to the decision it'd be like just easier to do it in Cork, I guess. I think we thought Ross was flashier, and Wayne, our waiting room, were recording with him and stuff, and we were like, oh yeah, that's really cool. So but I mean, we're happy with it. Like, I think it could have been more, you know, listening back to the recordings now, it's like we just want everything to be more noisy and more live.
Yeah.
But I think at the time we wanted to have something that you could hear what we were playing. That was actually our motivation. Nothing about how it would sound other than distinctly being able to hear the parts, you know.
And ye certainly did get heard. When we come back, we'll talk about what happened next for 10 past 7. But first, we're going to go to some more tunes from this weekend's Cork Jazz, happening from Thursday all the way through Monday, the biggest music weekend of the year. And this episode of the podcast, we got some of the more eclectic and homegrown tunes for you, happening Saturday afternoon at the Kino as part of that venue's ongoing festivities. At 1 o'clock, Clonakilty songwriter Eve Clegg is performing a solo show at the former Art House, while at 5 o'clock, Softboy Records in-house jazz band 5-2, hot off the release of their debut LP through the label, is contributing its unique world-informed take on jazz to proceedings. Coming up, we got 5-2 with Latin Vader, but first, this is Eve Clegg with In Needing Others here on Red on Red. Record the world. 5-2 with Latin Vader, Softboy Records, Resident Jazz Heads, playing this Saturday afternoon at the Kino as part of that venue's regular jazz festivities. Head to uticket.ie for more information and tickets. This is Red on Red, Cork's new music podcast, and we're still joined in studio by Kerry Bog Prog's magical weirdo, Rory O'Brien. And Rory, before the jump, we were talking about how the first album came out, and really, as it was kind of being released into the Byzantine period of the old music industry on the independent level. Fast forward to 2010, and the bottom had well and truly fallen out of CD at that stage.
Yeah, yeah.
Bandcamp had just emerged as a bit of a disruptor when it came to digital sales and direct engagement with artists. And the band was on a swing of dates between Ireland and France, which led to the release of Black Box Recordings, which, you know, out on the limb and yourself decided to go in and join partnership with on a crowdfunding campaign. So maybe talk to us a little bit about your circumstances at the time, what went into the gap between releases. I know there was a couple of splits and an EP, but maybe talk to us a little bit about where your head was at the time that you settled on a crowdfunding
scheme. I suppose it almost is a history of like how that stuff was going in a DIY, you know, the scene or whatever it was. First album comes out, you know, we were like, the fact that we got out something on CD was like amazing, to have that physical thing, and we could sell CDs. We managed to like get around Ireland by selling CDs. People heard about us through that. So yeah, it almost seems as though it's like a history of DIY, in the fact that, like, you know, we managed to get from nothing into like having CDs, having them in the shops. That was a big deal. And then I guess we were just, you know what was funny is what we just kind of went back into more underground stuff. We're like, we're going to release a 7-inch and do it with a kind of a, I don't know what you'd call it, Los Ingeros, or like a weirdo, I don't know what it was, like ska country punk.
It was certainly hard to nail down.
You know, and I mean, we loved that. And we were like, and even as like, we'll say Richter Collective was kind of coming around, all this other stuff, we were just like almost backing away from anything, anything that made any sense, you know. So we did another a single with Katie Kim doing some vocals on it. That was kind of a demo. And we're just kind of slow writing stuff, I guess, really, you know. And we were gigging a lot. So, and I think we, you know, this will come into it later, but just when we're gigging a lot, we're not able to write as much, you know. So that was why, we'll say, we started to kind of go, okay, we've got a couple of tracks. Where are we going to go from what we've done before? We've done, you know, we've recorded in houses, we've recorded in kind of semi, you know, makeshift studios and all that. We're like, okay, let's push it out there and try and record something in a more serious place. I had actually been in Black Box Studios with Waiting Room doing the second album, and it was just, I just said, if we get the experience of doing this, it'll count for a lot. And funnily enough, we brought Spud, sound engineer now, who's like doing stuff with Lancum, and he, you know, we brought him with us to
Member
do the recording.
Member of Percolator too, one
That's
of my favourite bands.
Yeah. And, you know, and he recorded the Boar Breathing. So we were like, hey, if we bring, you know, bring him over, and then we managed to do it. It was just a pie in the sky thing, but we were always kind of going, let's push things out there and do it ourselves.
Yeah.
But we realized if we were going to raise the money to do that, we'd have to do so many gigs, and we didn't really have any merch left and stuff. We were like, oh, what are we gonna, you know, it'll just go on for too long if we're trying to raise money through gigs. We didn't have any money ourselves. So then we were just fantasizing about the idea of like, how could we get money? And then we heard about this Kickstarter crowdfunding thing.
Because that was brand new at the time.
Yeah, and even so then we ended up going with fundit.ie, and at the time there was no music on the platform yet.
Yeah.
But there was one other act, and I can't remember her name off the top of my head now, but she actually just got her thing up there before, so we weren't the first, but we were the second to upload it onto it.
Yeah.
Because we just thought, well, this makes a lot of sense with our kind of idea of DIY as being like breaking down the barriers between the people who like the music on either side of the guitar, you know what I mean? So it's like, hey, if you give us the cash, we can do the thing for you. And it made a lot of sense for us to be able to do that, because we've done so many gigs, and we're not, it's not like a handout. We were like, this makes a lot of sense to be able to get, you know, it won't happen unless you do it. And if you want it, we'll do it. And if not, you know, we put a lot of effort into a campaign to get money.
Yeah.
And then we managed to raise like $5,000 to get the ferry over, to go recording in this amazing studio that this guy Ian Burgess, who kind of taught Steve Albini how to be a sound engineer, converted a farmhouse in France. The X and Shellac and a bunch of bands recorded there. Rednecks did albums there. We recorded with Dave Odlum, who was like a founding member of Keela, and he was in the Frames, and he's after winning a Grammy doing mixing for Tanarawin, you know, after the fact that we were there. So it was just this kind of, it was always us trying to like do stuff ourselves, but push it out there. And the learning experience we got from doing this recording has paid off, you know. You know, it's just unbelievable, and it was a personal goal as well as trying to do the best we possibly could do for the people listening to it. We were like, how can we do the best thing we could do? And it was like everyone working together. So we recorded it, and then we were able to just give it to the people who recorded it or who funded it, and then also not profit off of those people's investment and just say, hey, you've now allowed everybody to have a listen off this music. So it's just, yeah, it's Creative Commons, do what you like with it. And
because stems are still available for a remix if you get in touch with the
lads. Yeah. So it was just this kind of thing of like, let's make this thing happen, you know. And I mean, I guess we were coming at it from an ideological thing as well as it just making sense for us. And again, now it's like, oh, it's just, yeah, funding campaigns. But we literally had to like rationalize the whole idea of it, you know, amongst ourselves, amongst the three of us. And then we talked to the lads from Out in Limb. We said, look, hey, you know, we are able to do this on our own. We don't want to burden anybody with trying to put something out. And then they were like, hey, no, we'll kind of front the digital release. And then, you know, just to kind of keep everybody involved, and if it would help them out and help us out, that would make sense, you know.
But it was definitely an exercise in turning listeners into stakeholders. And if my memory serves me correctly, you know, you had different tiers for involvement, including selling the rights to your launch gig, which eventually went to the very short-lived Bourbon Street venue, which is now the White Rabbit Barbecue.
I think, you know what, actually, that was a funny one, because we had like a thing, it was like $500 would play anywhere.
Yeah.
And I think Bourbon Street were like, hey, we'll just do it anyway. Do you want to just do a gig? And I don't even know what they gave us. But we did do another one, and it wasn't even part of the funding thing as well, where we played in Swinford in Mayo.
Great.
In a pub that actually was closed down. And then they only opened it a few days of the year to keep the license. And it was, I can't remember, she's great, Walsh was her second name. But it was the family owned the bar, and we played there, you know? And it was just somebody who was like, we pulled our money together.
I was supposed to say, was that the Mayo Punks?
It wasn't. It was just people who were into the band that, you know, we kind of knew a few people from up that way. But it was literally just all part of that same thing of like, hey, you know, that's what it costs to get us up here. And to make it worthwhile as well, was say if nobody shows up or if flows, you know, it's like, it's kind of crappy coming up with a number. We were probably trying to give money back on the night. But and then we did another thing as well, where we had like a box that was like, instead of, and you know, the artwork for stuff goes into another tangential thing, you know, having a CD with multiple covers on it. And I won't even go into it. But anyway, we had a black box that was an electronic noise box that we also gave to people who funded. So instead of having a piece of, you know, a record that sits in your shelf or whatever. And at the time, you know, digital listening, you know, the records hadn't really come back. Yeah. You know, I mean, they were always there, but it wasn't like expected of you to have a record. Mm. Everyone was like, but I use my iPod or whatever it was. My Creative Zen. That's how I listen to tunes.
Jesus.
So we were like, let's give people something else. So now here's a box that actually can make noises that you can use for your own music or soundscapes or anything like that, or make you interested in. And we made that box ourselves. Well, you know, the box we bought, we painted it. We made, like, Matt pretty much designed the circuitry along with people on the internet for this delay pedal noise box thing.
Are there any of those left?
There's a few, yeah. We'll bring them out of hiding on the 1st of November in the Spalpeen Fauna.
After that point, the timeline for 10 past 7 starts to get a little bit fractured as different people go to different parts of the world. You yourself, you pursue your career in graphic design with Doodle, etc. Maybe talk to us a little bit about, I suppose, just life taking people in different directions. 10 Past 7 does stay together as an engaged gigging entity at different points over the course of the last couple of years. Just kind of talk to us about how the process for you has changed of getting together and jamming, as well as the different things that you've taken on in your own time to keep your creative juices flowing, like Dancing Bears, like Hands Up.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of like we were super productive before because we were practicing like 4 days a week, maybe more, when we first started. And then if you divide that out to like, you know, drummer moves to Dublin, bass player is in Macroom or somewhere out in the countryside. Although that was class because we were jamming in the countryside a lot of the time.
Yeah, no one's giving out to you there.
Yeah, so it was... It just was like a spreading out of the time, you know, we could spend on that stuff. And we were still gigging quite a lot, I think, though. But also, I guess we weren't gigging... We weren't being asked to play a lot of gigs for a while as well, because I think people were like, oh, they're too big for their boots, or like, oh, they've just done one last week, so they won't want to do one this week.
No, I'll tell you, as a promoter at that time, you're talking about 2010 and I was doing stuff with Drop D.
Yeah.
I had long thought about doing a 10 past 7 gig, and then I saw what you were asking for the launch gig.
Oh, right.
Thing, and I thought that was your rate.
Oh, yeah, no.
Oh, right. Well, that makes sense. It was
well,
just like...
Yeah. I mean, we played so many things. I think that was just... That was actually the price was more so just to get something in the door and make a special occasion of it. But we've played for a lot less. Still do.
It's what it takes to get things going.
Yeah. But I think... So, what I mean, I suppose there was the high point of all that period between the Black Box and now was going on a tour in France and Spain with Hands Up Who Wants to Die. So we did like 10 gigs in 14 days, played, you know, all around France, back down to the south of Spain, up to Barcelona and around, went to a gig in Paris and came home. And that was like something that we had meant to do all the time. We played a couple of tours in England that were kind of our own thing.
Yeah.
But a lot of the venues maybe were almost random rather than maybe people who were interested in kind of more specifically our type of music or kind of a DIY noise rock or whatever it is. But this tour with Hands Up was like, whoa, you know, people are really coming out to see them. And then we were playing, and then we kind of ended up swapping who played last on the night, and that went really well. And people who really liked Hands Up were like, man, what about, who cares about this 10 past 7 band, but vice versa as well. But we did really realize that if we were to do something like that again, we need to have a full length, you know, recording, an album, something to promote the gigs, and a kind of a new body of work as well. Because funny enough, if you think of like 10 gigs in as many days, there's a lot of times playing those same songs. It never felt as though, oh geez, you know, I wish we had something else, because we were like, we're doing, you know, we're really cooking on those songs.
Yeah.
But if you think about it, oh, you come back again. So it really made us think like, oh, you know what? I mean, there was another thing that happened as well, where we were kind of sharing merch money with Hands Up as well, because we're like, look, we're all in it. It's all our petrol together. And we're like, shit, we can't really contribute as much. Because and we couldn't, if we were on tour with another band, we weren't getting write-ups about our stuff or anything. So actually, for the venue's sake, for the other bands, for everybody's sake, it makes a lot more sense to have something that you can kind of promote, or that can, you know, bubble to the surface a lot more than an EP that's up for free from a few years ago, you know.
Yeah.
So that kind of really spurred us on to think, which just seems like obvious stuff, but every time we do anything, we have to come at it from our own way, you know? It's not like everybody makes an album. We were like,
no.
Let's do a bunch of EPs, you know?
I
thought that maybe we could collect all the EPs into an album and then we get away with it. But
a box set?
Yeah.
At some stage.
You know. But so we after that, we kind of said, right, doing gigs, because we were kind of all in different parts, you know, we were all working, people went away on holidays and stuff, and that's going on. But at the same time, we were always kind of playing, and a lot of people were wondering if we were still a band. And then that's a kind of another funny one where you're like, well, we're playing as often as we possibly can get together.
Yeah.
We're probably doing 2 days of a weekend every 2 months or something, working on stuff. But if you're not visible, it's like, what is a band?
Yeah.
Something like that. But I mean, I guess now, yeah, we've got a full kind of album recorded. We're just mixing it at the moment. So like that time spent not gigging has kind of meant that we actually could get this far. I can't imagine if we were gigging as much as we were before, you know.
We'll talk a little bit about the process behind this new upcoming LP, as well as your thoughts on almost parachuting back into the Cork music scene at this particular juncture a little bit later on. But first, let's go to some more tunes. Collins is quite a busy spot throughout the jazz, living up to its reputation as a home of folk and Americana, which makes the booking of two of Cork's most forward-thinking soul acts a little bit of a surprise. At 8 p.m. on Sunday, Shukra launching their self-titled debut album with a special intimate gig in the back room of the Douglas Street venue, followed at 11 o'clock by Niall McCabe, a man that refers to himself as Transatlantic Soul, if Transatlantic Soul means anything to a Kerry sex bog progger.
Maybe I am one, actually, because I was born in America. So
you are a Transatlantic Soul in and of itself. Then you're very definitely going to relate to the Niall McCabe band, who we'll hear from momentarily. But first, this is Shukra with brand new single Notions, here on Red on Red.
We fell in love with an ocean of love. I'm the one to make you feel this way. And if you would just let me, then I know I can convince you I'm a different man. Just take me to your loving arms, enfold me in your tender charms, and know that when the morning comes,
Transatlantic Soul with the Niall McKay Band with 1 to 4 playing at 11 o'clock on Sunday night as part of Collins' lineup for the Cork Jazz Weekend. Make sure to check out collins.ie or check out Collins Live on social media for more information, including Shukra, Niall McCabe, and I believe all three bookings across the weekend from Mary Collin are sold out. It is a massive weekend up and down the city, and for more information on the Cork Jazz, you can also head to niallor9.com where the complete guide to new music in the city over the course of the weekend is available. This is Red on Red, Cork's new music podcast on redfm.ie and through all of your podcast apps. And we're still joined in studio by Rory O'Brien of 10 Past 7 and a bunch of other weird outfits. Before the tunes, we were talking about how things were coming together heading into this new album of yours. And I suppose the thing we ought to ask first of all is, you know, 10 Past 7 comes back from a long gigging break, supporting By Curious and playing alongside God Alone on the big stage inside in Dali, as well as announcing this gig that's upcoming at Unspalpine Fáinne with Horse in support on Friday, November 1st. A sound affair for sound people. I suppose talk to us a little bit about 10 Past 7 and what it's meant to younger listeners, any kind of feedback you've got from them that are now in their own bands, and just kind of how you feel about, I suppose, parasailing into the current state of weird guitar proggy music in Ireland in 2019.
Yeah, I mean, all I know is that I know a lot less about what's going on, because I got all my information from just going to the gigs and going to everything that I could. So
yeah.
I think I had a daughter 2 years, or I have a daughter now that's 2 years old, and the first gig that we got to, myself and Claire went out in the middle of the day to see an all ages show, and it was God Alone upstairs in the CYM, whatever it is, the YMCA in Cork.
The ground floor.
So it was amazing. Like, so I was like, I'm still going to gigs, but it was an all ages gig. And we saw the lads, and I was like, oh, class. That I'm really happy that there's something with some. Because, I mean, as much as I'm, like, I'm a punk or, like, whatever, I still get off on, like, just musical gymnastics and stuff like that, too, you know. So I think the lads are just really cool because they, you know, they have a lot of different things going on.
They really
so it was
do.
Really great to play with them in Dali and kind of... I mean, I wonder, you know what it was like? We played as many gigs as maybe an international touring band over the last while, where we were like, oh, you did Body and Soul, and we did one up, and we played a bit every year, you know?
Yeah.
Or maybe we skipped a year, and so we were kind of tipping away, so I guess, and then also after recording, you know, learning all the music to be able to record it, doing the gig was, you know, it didn't feel that kind of... strange, you know, except trying to get the sound right is always awkward. But
I was about to say, how'd you feel about playing in Dali in the new space with that Arcline PA system?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I just think it's a great venue. I think it's set up to be for, you know, DJs and stuff. There's a lot of flashy lights and a lot of certain things are set up for that, but I think that the lads are doing, like, I think it's awesome that they're putting on bands, and they're trying to, like, they moved, there was a kind of a barrier in front of the stage that's moved out of the way a little bit, you know, and getting people in, you know. It's just, it's just such a great place to see things, you know. There's a great visibility, the sound is really good.
Well, the sight lines are immaculate,
you know, so it was really cool to do that. I mean, for us, it was like, we didn't really tell many people we were doing it. It was like, let's do this under the radar. And in a funny way, it was kind of trying to maybe play with people we didn't really know personally.
Yeah.
You know, because that happens where you end up going, oh, is there any gigs? And then you're like playing to the same people again. And, you know, there's people who probably started secondary school before the last time we were playing a gig, you know, that they could go to. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, and we're still kind of silly, childish rock and rollers or whatever it is. So I think the music is still something that people can, you know, from either end of it, our mates who are like all middle-aged and people who are kind of just kind of coming into the city or being exposed to getting to see live music. I mean, it's kind of interesting when you've got the internet, you can watch a load of music, you can hear it, but to get a chance to see stuff live is still, there's still a kind of an age barrier to a lot of that stuff. Mm. Or you know, or where you are, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you can obviously access a lot of stuff on the internet if you're living, you know, or if I was living in Killarney, but you're not going to see any bands that are playing something, you know, that's as interesting as what was on that night in Cork, you know? So so I'd like to be able to do more gigs and as we did before in more random places. Yeah.
We talk about 10 past 7 kind of sharing stages with people that you didn't necessarily know personally or maybe a little bit of an age gap. Bicurious were headlining and, you know, they're being tipped for big, big things on the international scene in terms of progressive and Matthew Rock, whereas God Alone have kind of really, really, really made inroads right off of a superhuman wholesale amount of hard work that they really put in. I suppose maybe talk to us a little bit about how you feel about lads making noise now in 2019. You know, how you see the state of things, etc. And just
I guess when we were playing, I kind of think about this a lot. But I think when we were playing, the fact that we were playing something that was noisy and that was a bit different was in our minds, like, you know, an act of defiance or something that was meant to click people's heads into, okay, you don't have to do the same thing all the time. You know, that just, you know, stopping and starting and doing stuff and maybe, you know, it wasn't about a lineage of music where it's like, oh, we're going to reference Fugazi here and that means we like them and then that means we're part of that. You know, it was more just that we wanted it so you could listen to it and be like, whoa, I wasn't expecting that. And wow, you can do this. We put a lot of hard work into the music. And it was that kind of thing to make something that's like, wow, geez, they really put a lot of effort in, and but it's not generic in a lot of ways.
Mm.
I think now that maybe that message isn't there. You know, we're just kind of playing. It's like there's so much exposure to stuff, and your relevance or what would be exciting is kind of, I wonder. You know, I'm intrigued about when we play gigs again. It's like, oh, yeah, well, yeah, I'm sure people can do that. You're allowed to do that. You know, I mean, we'll say, you know, speaking of Slayer or something, you know, they're finishing up now. But when they started, it was like, you know, there'd be pickets outside their gigs. Like, you know, now it's like, psh,
well, that's,
it's, you know. So I think that maybe the more interesting stuff is in a lot of different genres and kind of, it's just all blown apart, like, you know.
We're in that post-genre mindset, yeah, right? Where, yeah, look at God Alone, and they're dropping so many references to, you know, to indie and dance into, yeah, what is ostensibly black and shoegaze.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I mean, even seeing Fixity play with, like, Jimmy Cake and thing, and even Jimmy Cake is a funny one because they kind of evolved as a band almost. You know, they, yeah, at the time they sounded this way, and then, you know, when I saw them play a couple of years ago in Body and Soul, it was like this big drone thing, and it was like, you know, but it was right on point of what was kind of refreshing at the time, you know. Whereas I guess with the 10 past 7, as we've been working on the songs for so long, they're not really stuck in time in the same way as maybe some other stuff. I don't know what's new out there. I have no idea. I don't know what's going on. How maybe that's a good thing.
Well, I mean, you certainly occupy your place, and I know that there are, yeah, people that are excited to see 10 past 7.
I think that's
again.
Maybe why I want to get out and be able to play some more gigs. I mean, I did a lot of stuff with, like, Cortex, you know, like a kind of a, I don't know what, noise metal group, and then doing folk gigs myself and improvised things. And so, I've kept busy doing all that stuff, but in a kind of a live music, loud PAs and stuff, in a kind of, I don't know what it's going to be like, or who we'll end up playing gigs with, or who we'll meet. And I mean, I hope we don't end up playing with the same type of bands.
I don't think that's going to happen, because, again, being the beneficiaries of being in that post-genre space, there are younger bands that are going to be enthused for supporting you on whatever gigs tail off, yeah, your next album. And on that topic, you were hinting throughout the podcast about the recording of a new album, the new album nearly being finished and in the mixing process. I suppose, talk to us a little bit about how the new album has come together, who you're working with, what the process has been like, and maybe what we can expect.
What we can expect? Well, yeah, I just think it's going to sound more like something that we've been working towards all the time, you know? It's, yeah, not like a pinnacle of anything, but it is, well, it's got loads of facets to it, and that's what I said, like, the songs are made up over a long period of time, but they're all finished in the same way, so I think it's got a lot of different textures in that. We recorded it up in Spud Studio, well, we recorded with Spud and Ian from Percolator up in Gorilla Sounds, which is under a Dart bridge, so it's in an arch. But we also practice there, so we kind of practice in Cork and then up in Gorilla Studios. So we kind of made up a lot of the stuff in there. So, like, to be able to record somewhere, and, like, when we started maybe writing this, Spud didn't even have a studio in Dublin, and now he's got, like, the kind of gear that he needs to be able to do it. So I think it just sounds like bang on, you know.
Yeah.
And he's grown with us and our mentality of how things should sound, you know. So I think compared to what we were able to do before in a DIY way, which I would still feel that this is, it just sounds like class.
And does recording under a Dart kind of produce any challenges? Because
you just have to play loud enough so you can't hear the trains.
Class. Would those have been included at any stage as kind of part of the ambience? Or
I assume they've been on too many recordings that have been in, came out of Gorilla Studios so far, so I think we're going to leave it off. Actually, there's probably more electronic noise, so as the trains kind of go over, there's this kind of wave of electromagnetic kind of crackling happening.
Yeah.
And you're like, what's that? Oh, no, it's the train.
But that's what you want by that same time.
Yeah, but I mean, it's just... I just think it's the recording that we would have loved to have done all the time when we were recording. Like, to think that we could practice, and actually by curious jam in the room right beside, so we'd met him before, there's actually three practice spaces and studios under these arches of these bridges, you know, down an alleyway. So it really feels like, I don't know, it's back in the 80s when people were recording in dingy, you know, alleys with rats and mechanics and stuff. So,
but that's getting straight down to the roots of making interest in music.
Yeah.
That's the surroundings. Speaking of people that have been involved all along, are Out on a Limb going to be involved this time around?
Don't know. I mean, what we wanted to do, again, the same as what we did with the last few EPs, was like, we can get it together to do this ourselves. And then once we're kind of finishing it, so I'd say once we have it mixed, we'll kind of see what is this. And then we'll kind of talk to them, and we might talk to some other people, or I don't know. We hadn't really thought about it too much because we didn't want to tell a label and go like, it's going to be out next week, because we don't know, you know. Yeah. And we're not going to put any, like, we've already put enough pressure on ourselves to do it, you know.
Yeah.
So we'd like to get it done to a point and then start putting it out there see where it can go or whatever, you know.
When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the immediate future of 10 past 7, including the gig on Friday, November 1st at Unspalpeen Fonach. But first, we're going to go to some more tunes from this week's Jazz Weekend excursion happening at venues all around the city and county from Thursday through Monday. The biggest music weekend of the year, and we got two cracking homegrown tunes for you as part of that, playing on Sunday night at the Kino from 8 p.m. Tickets available at uticket.ie. Elaine Howley and Fixity in a double headliner of incredible Cork psychedelic music. Elaine Howley striking out solo with a single as part of Touch Sensitive Records' Whacker That compilation, a cassette looping composition entitled Song for Mary Black.
I actually remember doing an improvised thing with Dan and Elaine in the old Gulped Cafe when I was like after getting a bunch of distortion pedals. And I mean, that's, you know, that's the amazing thing of like being able to do stuff, you know, when the Triskel had that kind of going where you're like, all these people are like heavily involved in a bunch of other stuff, but we can have a jam together. And I don't know, it's class.
Speaking of Dan Walsh, we also have Fixity with World Line, taken from his No Man Can Tell album, which was released earlier this year. On the other hand, this will be the audio taken from the jazz headliner at the Poor Relation last year, which was a jaw-dropping gig. And I mean, physically, I saw BIM kids come down from Dublin, look at each other, agop, as the lads were doing their thing.
We played with... I do vocals with Hands Up Wants to Die, and we played with Fixity in A4 the other week. Like, and yeah, it's just... I like, for me, I feel more akin to what Fixity are doing maybe than some of the stuff that we were doing back in the day, you know?
Yeah.
And it just brings so many different things together, and it has that... I don't know, it just feels really right for the moment now, where it's like, you know, that mix of improv and kind of just simple rhythms, you know?
Yeah.
It's amazing, like, yeah.
We'll get straight into it. So, this is Elaine Howley with Song for Mary Black here on Red on Red.
Thank you.
Fixity with Worldline live at the Poor Relation, closing off last year's Jazz Weekend festivities at the Poor Relation. The Cork Jazz Festival continues throughout this bank holiday weekend from Thursday, October 26th to Monday, October 28th. This is Red on Red, Cork's new music podcast, and we're joined in studio by Rory from 10 past 7 and a whole bunch of other outfits. And Rory, before we wrap it up for this episode of the podcast, the floor is yours. Any curses you want to put on people, any shopping lists that you want to run past people that are listening, it's all yours.
We're doing a gig in Cork though after the Jazz Weekend, so when everyone is like jazzed out of it, then they get to kind of maybe get the cure on, so maybe it's not a curse, it's a cure from the Jazz Weekend after the day after Halloween in the Spalpeen Fánach. We're playing with Horst, there's going to be a few other acts announced, but we're still kind of figuring out some stuff, but it's just going to be, we're going to do like fancy dress stuff, and there's going to be a bunch of weird things happening. And we haven't played in Cork, I think it's been like maybe 2 years since we did our own gig in the city, and it was actually in the Spalpeen before, and I think it's just an ideal place for people to have the crack.
It is lovely.
Like, you know, you don't have to be bombarded with the loudness of the music, or you can talk, you can move around, it's not, you know, and it's not grandiose.
So that tiered structure is perfect for that.
Yeah, yeah. And like, we haven't gotten a chance to play with Horse before, and like, they're, you know, good buddies of ours. So I think it's a good, yeah, it's going to be pretty cool, and we'll have a couple other things to announce soon. And yeah, and then we won't be back around. That's the other thing, is we're kind of, once we do this gig, we're going to be not doing gigs again until maybe it could be summertime again, you know, before we're kind of doing something again, because we're going to be finishing this album and the gigs get in the way.
Of course they do. So. But of course, everybody can get caught up on your previous releases at 10past7.bandcamp.com. Yeah. They can find you in all of the streaming services. You're not very social though, like, as in like, there's social media pages, etc. But
we didn't know what they were, you know, and then we had nothing to say because we were jamming.
You're busy men. You're busy knocking out the tunes more so than worrying about engagement.
Yeah, I mean, when we will have something to share with people soon, I think, and then it'll make more sense. Yeah,
savage. Really looking forward to it. That about wraps it up for this week's episode of Red on Red, Cork's new music podcast from Red FM and RedExtra.ie. Thank you very much to Rory Francis O'Brien for joining us this episode.
Thanks very much.
And thank you very much for listening. If you like what you're hearing, please take the time to subscribe and leave us a review on Apple and Google Podcasts, Spotify, as well as all your other podcasting platform. Every like, every share on social media, every subscription, every rating, every bit of word of mouth helps us spread the word of DIY music in Cork City. Make sure to check out the artists featured online or at an upcoming gig, including this weekend's Jazz Festival. And if you'd like more Irish tunes, please be sure to listen into Green on Red on Sunday nights with Alan O'Donovan for the best of all that is Irish on Cork's Red FM 104 to 106. Rory, you're leaving us with the closing title of your last release, going all the way back to 2010. This is Orientation from Black Box Recordings.
Yeah, this is actually, all I have is visions of me playing in France, lying on the ground for the intro and kind of closing my eyes and then opening my eyes when I had to get up to continue playing the song, and everyone just looking over me like I was in a grave. And that's when I hear the song, that's what I think about.
And you too can transcend with the help of 10 past 7. This is Orientation. This has been Red on Red, and we'll talk to you next week.
Red on Red.